What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Hardcore Troubadour. My name is Brian Wallace.
And my name is Tyler Short, and if I'm coughing or choking today, it's because I was screaming for an hour earlier in band practice, and then I had to come home and lay down on the couch in the quiet dark for a while because I felt like I was going to throw up.
Yeah, people would never know that from having seen you on stage, but
Well, people don't see me screaming in a very, very hot and closed space for an hour and then feeling very, very bad afterwards.
well, I appreciate that you give it all, even in practice.
I really do,
And
honestly. I jump around.
y'all are preparing for some big shit right now.
Yeah, we are.
Where are you going? Tell the people.
I will be in Japan in 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be there in 2 weeks. Which feels crazy.
It's going to be so awesome, dude. I'm so proud, so excited. Y'all are going to kick ass. You're going to have a blast, and we can't wait to hear about it.
I can't remember if I told you this, but I suggested getting me one of those leash backpacks. And I told them I'd wear it if they got me a leash backpack.
Yeah, I mean, in Tokyo, it's not a bad idea, man. You know, you could easily wander off and get lost.
Yes. And I also just think it'd be funny. I'm so excited to turn my phone off for like 7 straight days.
I mean, yeah, it's good for that. If nothing else, are you going to be
Yeah.
able to take pictures or anything? Do you have a camera?
No.
Other people will document it for you.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah. That's fucking real celebrity status, man. You're like, I don't have to take pics. There, people are going to be around. Like, I'll be in them, dude. It's going to be so awesome. And hopefully you get some nice fall weather over there, because there, I mean, depending in the Tokyo area, the weather is very similar to the States. Like,
Okay, I was very curious. I was going to look it up before we left so I didn't dress inappropriately.
definitely smart to look it up, but I have been twice, once in the summer and once in the winter. And in the summer, it was hot as hell and humid. And in the winter, it was freezing and snowed one day. And this was all, you know, in the Tokyo area, which is gigantic. You know, maybe it'll be nice fall weather. I don't know, but definitely look it up, dude. It's going to be awesome. I want to go back. I'm so stoked for you.
Well, you just got to leave the country.
I did.
And I didn't even know it until you texted me and was like, I'm in Mexico City right now.
Yeah, and of course, the thing that I referenced was, you know, that I was by Leon Trotsky's house in Mexico City. Yeah, Rutschen and I took a little trip for our 10th wedding anniversary. And it was our first excursion without little man, and he stayed with his cousin and grandparents and didn't miss us at all, which, but yeah, so you know, so no guilt there. He had a blast, because also she lives in an apartment now that has a pool, and I was getting class shamed by my son on the way back, because
No
he
way.
was like, why don't we have a pool? And I was like, it's very expensive, especially in Brooklyn, to live in a place with a pool, bud. We go to the public pool. And he was like, yeah, but Kaya has her own pool. And I'm like, well, Kaya doesn't live in New York City, and Kaya's parents both have jobs that pay more than I make.
Wait, are
So
they over in, are they in Jersey or are they in Long Island? On Long Island.
they're in Jersey, just outside of Philly, like that
Okay.
side, which is still not a cheap part of the country, but cheaper than New York City. But they have a, you know, they have an awesome apartment, and you know, they just have like a pool in the complex, you know, that like nobody uses apparently.
So it really it does seem
Yeah,
like just
it's
their
like, yeah,
pool.
because yeah, my father-in-law told me that they like took the kids over there like every day, and they would be the only ones in there, and it was like hot sunny days, you know. So I'm like, I don't know.
It's the
But
iPad
any
generation.
that's what it is. Kieran is the post iPad generation, so we'll see what kind of fucked up stuff he gets into. But we went to Mexico City. It was my first time there. I've been to Mexico a few times, but never to Mexico City. And man, it was sick. It was, you know, both huge and sprawling, yet incredibly chill at the same time.
Whose idea was this trip?
Rutschen's the one that first brought it up, because she had been once as a teenager and wanted to go back. And Frida Kahlo is one of our favorite artists. And
Okay.
then when we sort of combined, like, okay, place that we haven't been together, we looked up tickets, they weren't that expensive. And then realizing that once you get there, like, we stayed in a nice hotel for cheap, all of our meals, everything. Like, it was hard to spend money. You know what I mean? Yet I didn't feel like we were, and we took the subway most places. We Ubered a couple of times, but the subway is 20 pesos, which is like, no, excuse me, it's 5 pesos, which is like a quarter each ride, compared to $2.90 in New York City. And it actually runs on time. Like, when it says the train's going to be there in 3 minutes the train comes, you know. And it was crowded, but everybody was chill. And I found it incredibly easy to get around. But my highlight was definitely geeking out at the Museum of Anthropology there. They've just done a fucking incredible job, man. Like, recreating and like including all these artifacts from like Mayan and Aztec to, like, it felt like you were in a Xibalba album cover, basically, being in there,
That's fucking
which
badass.
is what I was looking for, dude. It was like hard as fuck, like,
That rocks.
and super educational too. You know what I mean? Like, I learned it. I could have spent all day in there, which we spent most of a day in there. But it was just nice, man. Like, we'd usually plan one activity, like, oh, we're gonna go check out this museum or something, and then leave the rest of the day open. Found good food, great tacos, but also like other kinds of food. Got to practice my Spanish a little bit more and didn't embarrass myself. It was amazing.
Okay.
My proudest moment was I went into the bathroom at the Frida Kahlo Museum, which had like, you know, single stalls, so like unisex single stalls. And somebody had left their cell phone in there. And so after I went and washed my hands, I picked it up and I found the security guard and I was like, encontré un teléfono en el baño. See, and it was like, I found a telephone in the bathroom. And he understood exactly what I meant and was able to find the owner of it. So it was my good deed for the year. You know, I showed that I'm at least halfway competent in the little bit of Spanish that I know. So yeah, man, it was fucking sick. Thanks for asking. It was a great trip.
That's awesome. I'm excited to go somewhere where I'm a minority soon.
It's the best.
It's never happened to me in my life, so
Oh
I'm
yeah.
very interested in being around a bunch of people who don't look like me.
Dude, it's gonna be so sick. Like, I remember, I mean, has Isaac's probably played in Japan before, right?
Oh yeah.
Or have they? Yeah,
Oh yeah.
I figured
Well,
as much.
he's not going.
Oh, he's not going on this
We
trip.
got
Got it.
Yeah, we got Austin from Orthodox. We actually can't talk about Japan in front of Isaac because he gets sad.
Oh, nah, he'll be
Yeah.
okay, but that's a bummer for him.
Yes.
But that rules that Austin's going. Well, so this is one thing you'll see. I remember like the dudes that booked the shows when I went over there with Bold were like, hey, if they ask, they're like, it probably won't be a problem, but if they ask at the airport, you know, tell them that like you're playing for charity, because you don't want any issues around like, oh, are you doing business like in Japan or whatever. And so we were kind of like, as the plane was landing, we were like, okay, let's just make sure we have our story straight. You know what I mean? Like, because none of us had been before. And then we get through, and you know, some of the dudes had guitars as carry-ons and stuff like that. So we're taking them through, and like, the, you know, Japanese customs, I think, like, they open it up, and instead of like having questions like, what are you doing here or whatever, the dude like looks at the guitar and goes like, nice rocking, and like gives a thumbs up, and then like closes it and sends us on our way. And so that was like how the trip started. I was like, fuck yeah, this is gonna be great.
That's fucking badass.
Yeah, man, it's gonna be awesome. You're gonna,
Nice rocking.
yeah, he was stoked to see like a band come through.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so
Hopefully we have a similar experience.
I bet you will. And I mean, again, I told the kids there are going to take such good care of you. And I think I told you this too, the phenomenon, anybody that's ever been to shows or, just played or been to shows in Japan
Are you
is
talking
like
about the merch thing?
the merch thing, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I love
Like
that.
kids aren't going to come buy merch while a band is playing, ever. Even if they don't actually like the band, they're not going to be disrespectful. So I realized after the first couple of shows that I was like, oh, I don't have to like stand here the whole time. I can go chill, I can go mosh, I can do whatever I want while the other band is playing because nobody's going to come. And then during the break, kids come right back over. And I was like, this rules. So it's awesome.
Yeah, no, I love that. That reminds me of like there was an era of hardcore. I wish we could get back to it. And I know some bands have done it. I know Weapon X did it at LDB last year, not selling merch while bands are playing. I
Yeah.
remember Cold World used to do that, and it was always so funny because they would like sell shirts to like 10 or 20 people and then be like, "All right, well, the rest of you got to wait now."
Yeah, shutting down the store. Go watch the band. Come back.
I remember at Sound and Fury, the first year I went, when it was in like one of the big like pavilion things, I think it might have been where the following year the motorcycle incident happened. Or maybe that was the previous year, I can't remember now. Regardless, Rival Mob and No Tolerance played, and they didn't sell merch while bands were playing, and that line was lined up for probably like three straight bands
Wow.
waiting for merch. And then you know what I did later? I was walking by the merch table and there was no line, and I walked right up and bought a shirt.
Damn right you did. See, there you go.
Went, "Oh, there's no line. I'm gonna go see if they have my size." They did, and I bought it.
Hell yeah. Dude, that's awesome. So yeah, Japan is leading the way, and I agree. It would be nice to get back to that
Yes,
too.
everybody
And it was
should.
just especially important for like when the setup at every venue is different, obviously, right? But like when, especially when the merch is not in the same room as the bands. Like I think that's just so important. One, so like a bunch of people aren't just milling around outside while bands are playing, but also like if you're selling merch, to like know that you can like actually, you don't have to be stuck outside of the show the whole time,
Yeah.
basically. You know what I mean?
I am
So
sad. Mind Force was apparently, they were playing, I knew they were playing the fest we were playing Blood Axe, but they've dropped,
Oh no.
which I'm sad, especially because I found out that they were going to be playing our shows over there too.
Oh man, that
It was
would have
going to
been
be both of us
sick.
playing together. So now it's not that, and whatever.
I didn't know they dropped, but I hope everything is okay. They
Me
apparently
too.
this they played with DJ Paul in New York this week. I didn't know about it till after it happened. But 3 6 Mafia has a long storied history of playing with hardcore
Yes,
bands.
they do.
I'm glad Mind Force is carrying on that tradition. It was some kind of like pop-up thing, and like Adidas was one of the sponsors, you know what I mean? It was like that kind of thing, but I'm not cool enough to know about those in advance anymore.
That sounds like Jay's fever dream.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, I bet he was so fucking stoked, man.
That sounds like something he imagined into reality.
In 1999, when I worked the drive-through at Chick-fil-A, DJ Paul came through one time, and he was very nice to me. So,
That's cool. I
that's
almost went to a bar that Gangsta Boo was at one time, but we went and slept at the house we were going to stay at instead of going out to the bar. The other band
cool.
got to hang out with Gangsta Boo.
I've heard she was cool too. I mean, I say
Yeah.
she, rest in
R.I.P.
peace. Yeah. Dude, Memphis taking over the world. Right on, man. Hey, speaking of Memphis, the fucking blues.
Yeah, we're talking about Terraplane today.
Terraplane, which before we start talking about the record itself, I think we should talk a little bit about its involvement in the genesis of this podcast and the
Yes.
genesis of mine and Tyler's friendship. So correct me if I'm wrong, but the way that I remember it is when we had first started talking about Steve Earle, and when I think the podcast was an idea, but we hadn't actually like made the plans and started yet. You mentioned this record to me. And I had,
Because
because.
I had bought it on the tour when we met.
Okay. So
And
you
I
had
was
bought it on
like,
that tour.
we met when you all came up to around where our table was
Right.
at the fest. And the literal, like, second thing you said to me was, "That's a sick shirt."
That's right.
And I was like, I did like the like I was like, I was like, I can't believe like I'm getting to have a conversation about Steve Earle right now, even though I wore the shirt inviting that conversation, and then it had yet to happen. It probably wouldn't have happened, and it would not have happened if you hadn't walked up,
I
because you're
hadn't
the only
walked up.
person who said a damn thing to me the whole day. But I was like, I just got a Steve Earle record at a record store the other day. I wish I could remember what else. I think I got a Raveonettes record for Ashton at that same store. And
Was it in Tulsa or just somewhere around
no, it
there?
was in Milwaukee, and
Milwaukee.
I cannot remember where what the record store was. And I was hoping it would just be like stuck on here, but it looks like there's no indication of what the record store was, but it was 1999. For the price, I know that. But yeah, I was like, oh, I just bought a Steve Earle record that I didn't have yet, because this is when I was kind of, I wasn't as involved in the collecting as I have been because of this podcast and wanting to have the tangible thing when we talk about it. But at that point, I was just buying Steve Earle records as I came across them in the wild.
Right.
And this was like, I want to say like the fifth or sixth record I bought. And I was so thrilled to share it with you. And then when we got to texting later, I was like, you should check out that record. And then you did. And you were like, eh, it's not for me.
Yeah, I did, and I fucking hated it. Well, and it would, and especially at that time, we've talked about it a few times, but any of this kind of like, I think basically like post 2010 of Earl's stuff, I just hadn't listened to, right? So that includes, The Low Highway, which I fucking loved when I heard it, and this, which now that I've spent some more time, I have mixed feelings about. We'll talk about it when we get into it, but I think at the time, hearing this Steve Earle blues record, my reaction was very much like, this is just not what I come to Steve Earle for. And so that's, yeah. So my first response was, oh, maybe there's a reason I haven't bought or listened to this record. And I'm glad I haven't because I don't like it. But it's very important because it was part of the genesis of 3 years later, here we are still talking through and like getting closer to present day. Or this is 2015,
Yes.
this record came out. So pretty incredible.
And this record, I mean, we've got Dukes coming back in the mix for this record,
Yep.
which is different because the last few have been Steve Earle records, except for Low Highway was that the Dukes and Duchesses, I think
Yeah,
was.
the Dukes and Duchesses. And then we've also got the addition of a woman, Eleanor Whitmore,
Yes, the Mastersons.
from the Mastersons, who live apparently pretty close by me in Brooklyn,
Really,
but I've
the
never
first two times I
seen them.
saw Steve, it was with the Mastersons.
Nice, nice. Yeah, they are similar to Steve. They are Texas natives, but that now make Brooklyn or make New York their home. So, but sick violin playing and sick voice from Eleanor
Yeah,
Whitmore.
no, her voice is great. And I honestly, I one of the things I because I've been listening to it on Spotify, and I this is unfortunately because of how fucking cluttered this room has been. I haven't gotten to spend that much time in the room with the record player to listen to this on vinyl, in preparation for this one. So I hadn't taken this off my record shelf until just now to talk about the record. I hadn't read to see that she was on Baby's Just as Mean as Me, and that was the nice surprise today, was to go, oh yeah, okay, this is how this all ties together. Because I don't
Yeah.
know if I've looked at this since I put it on the shelf when
Oh.
we organized our shit. I think
I
I've only
mean,
listened to this on vinyl maybe once.
I've got so much stuff like that, man. It's just often it's hard to find the time to be, I'm like, I think you and I are the same. We're like listening to music all day, but have gotten used to not being tethered to one place while we listen to that music. And so it feels like a special like ceremony or like a ritual now, the times that I actually get to like put a record on and sit down. I should do it more now though, because Kieran is very intrigued by the record player, but then also
Is
like
he gonna like what you put on?
he usually doesn't. And he wants to, it's hard to tell him that I'm sorry, man, I can't let you fuck with the arm and like, stuff like that. So it's like, because it is, I can see from a 3-year-old's perspective how tempting it is to want to fucking
Oh,
scratch and
absolutely.
do all that stuff. So, we're probably gonna chill with that for a little bit.
I can't wait for the day when he sees a movie or a TV show where there's a DJ and you happen to come home and he's hooked up the record player and it's like, check this out, Dad.
I know he'd be in an incredible position. I've got it like high enough where he can't reach it like from standing. It's on like the third row of the show. Here's me thinking like that everybody, I'm like pointing at it as if anybody's gonna be able
This is an audio
to see
format, my
anything.
friend. Yeah.
Yes, I'm realizing that now. But also so he would also be have to be like awkwardly standing in my desk chair as he did it. Like teetering, which would be really funny. I'm just like realizing random things that I want to listen to that haven't. Well, this is you can take the boy out of Bradenton, Hot
Oh,
Water
I
Music,
love that.
7 inch.
Is that what other songs on that? The Hot Water Music B-sides are some of my favorite Hot Water Music songs,
Yeah,
honestly.
man, this one has that, and Hate Mail Comes in August is the
Oh,
B
yeah,
side.
those are great ones.
This is a great one.
Yeah, I've got the Alachua 7-inch. I can't remember what's the other song
Yeah.
on that. It's like a nice die cut sleeve. It's of their little Hot Water Music symbol.
It's awesome. I love the fucking their artwork so much, man.
Oh yeah, it's always I really wanted, dude, that was what I wanted for an altar perspective. That was one of the
Oh
things
yeah.
I one of I my frame of reference for what I would like the art to look like was Hot Water Music Snapcase. That was what I wanted. We ended up with what we got, and I was fine with it. But
Yeah, I mean it's great what it is, but it
I do love when people ask for my input and I give it and then it's not considered at all, though. I'm not mad about it at all. Don't tell
yeah, I
call
can
the paper and tell them I'm not mad.
yeah, I can tell it wasn't a sensitive subject at all. That is one of the greatest tweets of all. By the way, I'm not mad. Don't put in the newspaper that I was mad. I love it.
Oh, very good. Yo, before we get talking about Steve, just so I don't forget to tell the two little things from seeing him last week
Oh yeah, you
with
saw
my
Steve?
song with my dad and his girlfriend and our friend Scott. And he did one thing that I know was just a thing he's doing on this tour when he played Devil's Right Hand. And he before he intros the song, he says, like of all like with assaults in the home, mostly of all the rooms in the house, do you know where most assaults in the home take place? And a few people were like, kitchen. I was like kitchen. And like I was one of those rubes who yelled that as well. And he goes, kitchen. He goes, yeah, because that's where the weapons are. And then the next thing he says is, well, if there's a gun in the home, do you know what room the assaults typically take place? And everyone was like, bedroom. He goes, yeah, you got that, guys got that one a little quicker. And he said, because that's where the gun's kept, and that's also where you get caught. And I got a good chuckle out of that one. But yeah, and I honestly hate to have seen him a week ago, and I'm curious what he's saying right now with what's happened in Georgia again.
Again.
And I heard a horrifying thing today. I heard somebody mention like, oh, it seems like there's been a while since we've had one of these school shootings, and or there's been a break in the school shootings. And someone was like, yeah, summer break.
It was just summertime. Now,
That's
yeah, now
that's
schools.
the, we, yeah.
Yeah.
We have a summer break from school shootings. Like
Yeah.
that's what it is. And I heard this, and then I immediately, like one of my coworkers who has a small child, was walking by, and I was like, God, I just heard the most horrifying thing, and I can't even share it with you because you got a kid.
Yeah.
And they were like, "What do you mean?" And I was like, "It's just so sad. It's just so fucking sad."
No.
But that was awesome, and it got a great laugh. And there's a few things I think I've got to say mentioning him, because he played one song off this record. But the best thing he did during the set was someone yelled for Hillbilly Highway at one point, and he like paused for a second. He goes, "I got this. Believe it or not, I've got a plan. So just bear with me, and I'm
Wow.
sure I'll play some songs you want to hear if you're not if you're not asleep by the time, I play them." And then later, he is I'm trying it was I think it was before he played, I can't remember what song he was about to play, because his guitar tech was bringing him out another guitar. And I think it was after he played, it was one of, I'm blanking now. Fuck, I can't remember
I got the
what it
set
was
list
now.
right here from at the Lexington Opera House, right?
You have the Lexington Opera House set
Set
list?
list. Yeah, I got it right here. What are you thinking about? You want me
Well,
just
now that
to...
I know that the set list just exists, I can just look it up. But
Yeah.
so I can try to tell this story without fucking it up, even though I've already in the middle of fucking it up. He plays Hillbilly Highway,
Yeah.
but he plays it, whatever song he played it after was like perfect.
He played
He
It's
played it
About
after.
Blood.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was the song, the Ghost of West Virginia coal mine song. So he played after It's About Blood. He, starts Hillbilly Highway, and the "My granddaddy was a miner." Like that being the first line, I was like, that's such a perfect fucking song to play to lead into Hillbilly Highway. But his guitar tech did not know he was gonna do that. So he was like
Oh.
halfway out on the stage bringing him a new guitar, and then he turned on his heel and walked back off stage. And me and Scott were like, "Ah, he didn't know he was gonna do this." And I was like, "That's so fucking awesome that he heard a couple people in the audience yell for
Yeah.
this song, and he figured out a place later where he's like, I can throw this in right now." And he just fucking throws it in, and everybody sang along. It was fucking awesome, dude. It was so cool. It was the coolest thing he did the whole night, was just throw that little thing in for everybody.
That
And
rules.
yeah. I did I think I said this whenever we talked about "I'll Never Get Out of This World Alive," but he plays "God Is God" on this tour.
Yeah.
And when he was playing it, I leaned over to Scott and I went, "Dude, the last time, or like the first time we saw him, there was this lady screaming, this lunatic screaming for this song. I sure hope she's here tonight."
I love that that's what she wanted to hear. That's amazing.
More than anything, dude, she was screaming
Wow.
it all night, just an
Wow.
absolute lunatic wanting to hear "God Is God," which is a good song, but
Yeah.
holy shit, like of
Yeah.
all the songs to want to hear him play, that's it. Okay.
And dude, and you're so just to like nerd out, but also show how special that Lexington show was. Like you said, I just checked several of the other set lists from this tour, like Durham, Pittsburgh, a couple of other places. He goes from It's About Blood right into Harlem River Blues. So,
Yep. Yeah,
yep.
that was he was bringing out the electric like fucking whatever, like is I don't know what kind of guitar that was that he plays Harlem River Blues on. It looks almost like a big mandolin or like a
Oh, it's probably a dobro.
dobro.
It's like a
Yes.
with a the it's a guitar but with a metal on the front,
Yes.
right? Yeah.
Yes, it is a
Because
dobro guitar.
Justin, that makes sense because Justin played one of those quite often, so that's what he probably uses on that song. So yeah, Hillbilly Highway was a pure like spontaneous move at the request of that the audience. That's sick.
Yep, those fucking lunatics. It was awesome. And he ended with "Harlan Man" again, and it was so cool. And he gave a really good talk about voting and whether or not I agree with electoralism or whatever. I do believe that if you want to complain about shit, you have to at least participate in this whole thing. And I know I advocate for it, but if you don't want to vote for anybody, just show up and cast your blank ballot. It'll show up like you voted,
Yeah.
but it won't add that number to anybody.
I mean, it sent a, I don't, I, the Democrats don't seem to have learned anything from it, but it certainly sent a message in Michigan during the
Yes.
primary when they got 100,000 of those.
And yet you can do that without having an uncommitted box to check.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can just go and leave it blank. You can vote
Yeah.
for no one.
And
Like
I've,
I do it.
yeah, and also, especially because there are times too that there's been like, I don't want to cast a vote for either of these people in X election, but there might be some local shit
Yep.
that I really do want to vote for, right? And I'm
Yes.
not going to keep myself out of that just because I might not be voting or want to vote for a major candidate in like a federal election,
Yeah,
right?
we're not
So,
getting graded on this. It's not, you don't have to answer every question, man. And it's, I don't know. It really, like, I wish more people would advocate for that, 'cause like my dream scenario is that we have 70% voter participation in this country and someone wins with like 3,000 votes, and then watch the news try to reckon with what the fuck that means. And try to say that this was like a free and fair election, and it's like, no, it was all decided by advertising.
Well, regardless of what happens in this presidential election in November, I can't wait to get scolded for the result.
Yeah.
Because either way, that's going to be something that happens. But yeah, I think you're spot on. And Steve's a believer, you know, and I think it's something that there are times that I feel like I can't
It's
relate.
endearing, at least.
Yeah, exactly. There are time because right, there are other people, and it's like you hear that kind of stuff, and I'm like, you're just full of shit. And that's not Steve. He's able to fully recognize like the injustice and how fucked up things have been, are, and continue to be, but also truly believe that even this country, like even with all of the, you know, ghosts and demons that have existed here from its founding, can be something like for the working person. And yeah, I don't often feel that way, but I'm sure as hell glad that Steve does, and it's an inspiration. It also reminds me that one of the other things that I saw, by the way, in the Frida Kahlo Museum, I'm connecting this to Steve, is you know, she, for a lot of folks, like recognize her face just because like, her famous self-portraits and things like that. But she had polio as a small child and then was in an accident riding a streetcar in Mexico City when she was 18 that almost killed her, where like the streetcar got hit and like a metal pole like actually pierced her body and went through it. So she was in very poor health and often immobile or in a, you know, wheelchair for a lot of her life. But on one of her, she called them corsets, and I think that was like sarcastic because it was almost like body cast, you know what I mean? So like a plastered body cast, she painted a hammer and sickle on the front of it, and that's like what she would like wear while she was recovering from that accident. And I thought that was so
That's so
sick.
fucking hard, dude.
I took a picture of it and was going to send it to you, and then realized I can't send a picture to your phone. So,
I mean, you
but I have it.
can. It's just to roll the dice whether or not it's going to be legible.
I'll email it to you so you can see it.
That works. I can zoom in on the
It's
iPod.
pretty
I can't
sick.
zoom in on the flip phone.
Yeah, she also
Some flip phones have zoom technology and some don't.
in her bedroom, she also had like a fucking like framed pictures of Lenin and Stalin, which I was like, okay, girl.
One of these is not like the other,
Yeah, I
exactly.
know. But, you know, I think a lot of it was trying to piss off her parents, if I'm being completely honest with you at that point. She
That'll
was
do
like,
it.
yeah, she was like a, you know, a very gifted, rebellious, and incredibly intelligent teenager who found herself disabled to the point where like she often couldn't leave the house without pain. So you gotta fucking stick it to your parents somehow.
Wherever
But
you can, yeah.
yeah, so respect to Frida for that. But the old hammer and sickle reminded me of that. I was really delighted to see it. I like cackled and took pictures, and other people were just like, what? It was great.
That's so fun.
So yeah, man, thanks for telling us about that Steve show. I'd forgotten. And then of course afterward you hung out and have him booked for his inaugural appearance on Hardcore Troubadour, right?
No, I did talk to the girl who opened for him for 1 second though when I bought a shirt from her.
And who is that?
Zandi Dunlop, I think was her last name, maybe. I
Is
haven't
she
looked at
cool?
the shirt since I bought it. Zandi Hollop. She
Hollop.
doesn't have anything out yet except for like two songs. She played the last time we saw him, and she was way better this time. And I told her that.
What? That's awesome. She doesn't have anything out. Why is she opening for Steve Earle?
I don't know.
Huh. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if she's opening the whole tour of just like a regional aspect of it, but she played with them last time in Owensboro. That was her first tour, was opening for him. I'm very curious
Yeah.
where this got hooked up,
Yeah.
but yeah.
Her Instagram bio is just a sad hippie cowgirl songwriter.
That sums it up pretty much.
Okay. Zandi Hollop.
She was
Sick.
way better this time.
Nice. Well, that's
I was
good to
like, yo,
hear.
we saw you in Owensboro. You were incredible tonight.
That's a nice way of saying like you sucked in Owensboro, but I'm glad you kept at it. That's awesome.
Honest
Yeah,
feedback like that is important.
I think that's important too. Like I agree. There's no sense in bullshitting. I mean, especially like she's in a spot that a lot of people would love to be in, opening for Steve Earle, so you gotta be ready. But I'm excited to listen. But at least, right, you handed out Hardcore Troubadour stickers to the entire audience, right?
I only have six left. I need to order more.
No, dude, I'm totally fucking with you. That's
If we
awesome.
had had if we had had a, like a whole stack of them, I would have brought them and been like, "Hey, like," and given them to the merch girl and been like, "Yo, if you want to hand these out for free to anybody who buys something, like it would be sweet." But I only have six left, and
Dude, we'll make a plan for it.
yeah.
And actually, it's a good reminder, dude. Let me cover the next sticker order. We'll talk about it offline. Sick. And thanks to everybody that has a fucking sticker, and that has given a listen because they've seen it in the wild or at a show that Tyler was at. Should we talk about the record?
Yeah, let's start with the record.
All
You
right,
want to
let's
hear
hear
what
it.
he wrote about it? It's very short.
I absolutely do.
So Steve writes, "Lightnin' Hopkins once said, 'The blues is something that's hard to get acquainted with, just like death.' Then he declared with his very next breath, 'The blues dwell with you each and every day and everywhere.' On the surface, the one statement would seem to contradict the next, but the blues are anything but superficial. In fact, they run so deep and dark and close to the bone that folks walk around every day with the blues as though it were perfectly natural for a human being to go on living with a broken heart." Apologies to Tony Kushner. I don't know what that means. But he goes on, "There are those who will tell you that they know for a fact that the blues are all about the numbers, socioeconomic parameters, or rules of musical notation, as if mathematical equation of some sort could offer any insight into loneliness and despair. Others will swear it's a matter of geography, which side of the tracks you were born on, or the color of the dirt underneath your fingernails. For my part, I've only ever believed two things about the blues. One, they are very democratic, the commonest of human experience, perhaps the only thing that we all truly share. And two, that one day when it's time, I would make this record. And it's time. Hell, everybody's sick of all my fucking happy songs anyway." Steve Earle, New York City, November 2014.
Hell yeah. One, I love that. And two, I don't know exactly what he's referencing, but Tony Kushner is the playwright who wrote Angels in America.
Okay.
And I know, I feel like I've seen an interview with him. I just Googled it together, and he's like, I live in New York City, so I can breathe the same air as Tony Kushner. I hope to do a body of work like he did. So clearly Steve's a fan of Tony's playwriting. That's awesome. I got to meet Tony Kushner once, actually, at a pro-Palestine like student gathering. He spoke.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's Jewish and has for a very long time been an advocate for Palestine. So shout out Tony Kushner.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Well,
Yeah.
damn, and I'm learning stuff. I didn't know who Tony Kushner was, but I have heard of Angels in America.
Yeah, it's he wrote it as a play, but I think HBO made a movie, or like a multi-part like series. That's a fucking like tearjerker.
Yeah, I've heard it's a heart-wrenching
It's
story.
about AIDS. It's very
Yep.
heart-wrenching. As Tony lived through, as a gay man in New York City, like the early days of that plague, and especially when, gay people were demonized and the government and medical institutions either pretended AIDS didn't exist or knew it existed and didn't care because they didn't care about the people that were getting sick.
Being affected. Yeah, they
Yeah.
only cared when
So,
straight people started getting it.
right. Exactly. So, yeah.
Man, that reminds me, we're currently having TV parties with my coworker that we watch all the Mike Flanagan stuff, like Hill House and Bly Manor, and we recently watched Midnight Mass, and now we've got him over and we're watching the show Midnight Club, and one of the kids in that has AIDS, and they really touch on the like that era of like I think it's like 1991 that it's taking place and like how it's still very stigmatized and it's very, very sad.
Oh man. Yeah, I mean I just look, 91 is the year that Angels in America came out. So
There we go.
there you go. Yeah, that was awesome. Short and to the point. And I mean, I guess as we jump in and track by track, like I fucking love the blues, man. For you know what, for me, especially as a person from Memphis, I think for me, the blues is a lot like my relationship with baseball, actually. And this sounds ridiculous, but I'll connect to it. As a
Because you're a
kid,
Mets fan.
well, no, yeah, that's actually, I wasn't even thinking about that connection.
Yeah.
But hey, they've just won 9 games in a row and are in playoff position. So everybody watch out. Because I'm going to be fucking insufferable in October. They stuff that I loved as a kid, baseball and the blues. I took for granted that like my mom would take me to Beale Street, which is it's a cheesy ass tourist trap, but there would be like legit like old blues dudes just like playing there, and I liked it. And then something that for a long time I was too punk for, you know what I mean? Like I was too fucking punk for sports, and I was too fucking punk for the blues. But now in my older age, I've come back to like appreciating them and being like, why did I think it was ever corny to listen to BB King? This fucking rules. You
You
know what I
should have been
mean?
incorporating this into your.
I should have. Because it's fascinating too. Like we don't think of them as a hardcore band. And I mean, I guess at most they were kind of like crossover, but like early Corrosion of Conformity, right? When they were, I mean, they were a hardcore band. They were like a thrash crossover
Yeah.
kind of band. But they got popular when they took their turn to doing like basically like Southern sludgy blues rock. You know what I mean? And I think it was similar in that's like always was kind of an influence. But when they finally got like
The
comfortable doing
balls to
it,
do it, yeah.
It's like, because that's what made them different. Like I listened to early COC, which I've heard a lot of people rave about, and I'm like, this is fine, but I think there are dozens of other bands that do it better than what they did. But like, nobody else wrote a fucking ass stomper like Albatross. Dude, I hear that fat riff, which is it's basically just a it's a blues riff downtuned. You know what I mean? And like, but it's an ass stomper, man. So yeah, that's how I feel about it. And I think that's kind of, I don't know. I'm very like Steve doing these and listening to it again. I think at first, my reaction we talked about was, this is not what I come to Steve for. And while I still think there's a little bit of that in my reaction to it, I definitely, having spent more time with each individual song, have come to see, like, there's a few songs on here that I love.
Same.
But there's a high number of skippers. Like, this is
I
not
mean,
in my top by any means. Yeah.
there's not really any complete skippers for me on this record, but there's nothing that rises to the level that takes it out of it certainly being in my bottom three.
Yeah, so I think we should, I agree with you there. So I think just like starting with that, right? Like as we dig into the songs, like that there's this doesn't feel like a home run for either of us, especially compared to like how much brilliance there is in Steve's catalog. And especially coming off of the Low Highway, which,
Is a high for me.
right, yeah, being the Yeah, because that was the most recent studio album before
And
this one.
that was
Yeah.
the and that was one of my top five records.
Totally. So I'm finding myself now also understanding the chronology a bit more, wishing he would have like built off of that instead of doing this blues turn. But this is where he was.
But I do like, I don't know, I just appreciate that he's like tried on so many hats, and
Yeah.
whether or not they all fit perfectly, he at least like took the risk and like pursued it to the its like logical extent that he could. Like, I mean, if it wasn't for him being willing to take risks like I think he took on this, we wouldn't have The Mountain.
That's definitely true.
And that is undeniable.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point.
So yeah, so like if the balls that he had to write this record is the same balls he had to write The Mountain with Del McGorry Band,
Yeah.
then I'm happy to have this, meaning I got to have that also.
That's so true. Yep, I'll take that. Well,
And you know, maybe he'll swing and do a punk record one day and we'll go, you know what, this isn't what we're looking to Steve for, but if it weren't for him taking these big swings, we wouldn't have the records we like the most.
that's what's up. Well, let's dig into the songs then. So the first song is Baby, 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 Baby.
Parentheses, baby,
Per, yeah.
which, dude, that to me, even just this to start the record out on a song called Baby, 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 and then in parentheses, baby, that is funny.
It's yeah, I can look at it now and I'm like, you're fucking with us. Like
That
it's,
is
there's a
funny.
an awareness of like, yeah, man. I know what I'm doing here. Like,
Yeah, like my thought on this song is I don't dislike this song, but I do feel like it almost borders on parody.
yeah, it borders on parody. It's almost like a little bit of like self, like you would think maybe there's a world where he could have been like making fun of blues
Yeah,
during this.
if we found out he was taking the piss with this song, I would believe it.
Yeah, I totally believe it. The good thing that I can say about it is that I really dig the harmonica.
Yeah,
But
it's
other than
definitely a
that,
vibe. It's
yeah.
definitely a vibe, but it's maybe what it's three minutes and 39 seconds, teetering towards 4 minutes. It's excessive.
Which at teetering towards 4 minutes makes it one of the longer tracks on the record.
Yes.
Yeah, so a bit of an excessive opener. I agree.
The lyrics are funny though. It's fine,
Yeah.
but it's yeah, it's borderline parody.
Totally. So the next track is You're the Best Lover That I Ever Had.
He's playing this song on this tour, so
That's cool because I
yeah.
think one thing is I really like, I wrote, I like this acoustic groove better. Like,
And it sounds great live.
I bet it does.
I can attest.
And what I'll say here is it's like, it's interesting that he is very much leaning into the simplicity of blues lyrics.
Yes.
And But there's a couple other tracks that come up later, including the next one, but a few others later, where like he can't help but being Steve,
Yeah.
and like writing his, you know, typical allegorical like poetry with it. So it's like it's an interesting contrast. So again, like what I can say is like I like the acoustic groove. I like this song better than the first track, but it's still not like a hit for me.
It's so thirsty though.
It's real thirsty.
It's thirsty as fuck.
Yeah.
I really like the electric guitar in it, and I like the harmonica. I think this song is catchy, so I do fuck with this one. Where Baby 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 is kind of silly. I actually do like this. You're the best lover that I ever had. But so I'm trying to think at this point, him and Allison are on the outs at this
It's
point, right?
this is right about when they're divorcing
So
after 10 years.
these songs, and the thing Steve always says when he talks about writing songs for girls, and when he was a kid, and then having these girls argue about which song is about them, and wait, no, that song's about me. No, this song's about me, and him not having the heart to tell them they're all about him, actually. So like, I think about that when I'm listening to this, and I'm like, "Oh, these songs are about Allison." And then I think about like, what if they're just actually.
Yeah, I mean there are a couple where I'm like that we'll get to that I think are pretty uniquely like this point in your life, you know what I
Yes.
mean, being single or having just broken up. But yeah, that's funny. Didn't have the heart to tell them. They're all about me,
They're all
actually.
about me. It's very funny. He said it the other day, and it got a laugh out of me, just the same as it did the last time I heard him say it.
That's awesome. I want to talk about the Tennessee Kid, man.
It's my favorite song.
Mine too.
Yo!
Fuck, that rules, dude. So
There was one other song I thought that might be yours. I was between this one and that one, and I was just assuming it would be that one because we rarely share. But hell yeah, dude.
dude, this one, I think, I'm gonna be honest with you. I think when I first listened to Terraplane, I was so kind of thrown by the first two tracks that when we got to the Tennessee Kid, I was not paying close attention to the lyrics.
The lyrics are where I
Yeah.
just it they're so good, dude.
It's perfect. 'Cause like, so basically this is like an updated take on Robert Johnson's Crossroads Blues, you know, like the classic story that even if you haven't heard the Robert Johnson song, if you've seen the movie Crossroads or like featuring Ralph Macchio's sick guitar work, then you're familiar with this. But like it is to what I call this to me is like the definition of Southern goth. Like
Yes,
it's
it's
hard as
nefarious,
fuck.
dude.
It's nefarious and that hey, the balance comes due someday. Chilling. It rules.
It's dark-sided, dude. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's
It's
completely
very
dark-sided.
cool. The whole tone and all, dude, the lyrics, like, dude, the up jumped the devil in the middle of the thoroughfare. Who dares utter my most secret name? He roared. The kid yielded not so much as an inch to uncertainty. Steadfast, he rejoined the enemy in kind. Old patch then, Satan, Mephistopheles, Beelzebub. Like, using all of the devil's names
Yeah.
rocks so fucking hard. I
It's
love it.
awesome.
The fact that he managed to work those all in is just awesome. It's just so fucking awesome. By any other name, you ain't nothing like a rose. It's so good, dude. It's
Yeah.
oh, their lyrics are so good.
It's awesome. 'Cause it's, and it just, again, such a contrast. 'Cause he's like these first two tracks where he's like clearly very intentionally doing just kind of like simple, catchy blues, you know, like repetitive. And then this one, he's like, I'm gonna be if fucking Edgar Allan Poe was from Tennessee, motherfuckers. Like, and then, but you know, the connection still being there because it's based off of the Crossroads,
Yeah,
which
dude,
is,
it's so fucking
yeah.
hard, dude. The line "you never mentioned nothing about no kind of note, just said sign here, it's just a soul, you'll never miss it." Ah, oh, it's so good,
I
dude.
love it.
All the lyrics in this song are fucking phenomenal. The guitar tone's awesome too. This to me, this like like veers into like the feelings that the unrepentant give me.
Yeah, both thematically and musically, right? But and there's because there's that theme there too of like, well, if I'm going to hell anyway, I might as
Yeah.
well fucking rock, you know, like let me have a good time.
Yeah, reckon I was heading straight to hell by the highway, no matter how long or how hard that I prayed. God, it's so fucking cool, dude. It's so good. And then the more like more Satan names, Theophilus, Agrippa, Faustus, Paganini. Like it's so cool. I just this is the song that like makes me happy this record exists, period.
Same. Like I couldn't believe at first re-listen how I was like, how did I miss this? This rules. Like, and so then and it gave me like fresh ears, I think, for the rest. Where it's like, you know, the first two songs, again, this time I'm like, okay, I know what you've got for
See
me.
what you're doing.
Yeah, but like Tennessee Kid just fucking blew my shit away. So
Yes, it fucking rips, dude. It's a 4 minute song that like feels full.
I agree.
Yeah, and dude, just the hey, like the way at the end he's just like, ah, it's so good.
Yeah. I feel, dude, you gotta work the balance comes due someday into some lyrics sometime.
I'm gonna make a note of
Yeah, because
that
that's
shit.
hard. That's hard. I love it. I mean, speaking though of like the time in his life, right? And the breakup with Alison Moore when Ain't Nobody's Daddy Now. I certainly read this as very unique because the thing that's new, Steve's obviously been in and out of a ton of relationships and marriages, right, at this point. But this is the first time that
This
he's,
one was different.
this one was different. This is the first time he's been single in New York City. And I think there's something there too, just about like, you know, we know too that like John Henry is his life, but I can only imagine like it is hard enough to be the parent of like a like healthy, you know, like sort of like neurotypical child and like you know
Yeah.
what it's like you know taking care of a kid with disabilities like John Henry has. And so there's almost this like, yo, I'm going out on the town, man. I'm not nobody's daddy tonight. Like, you know,
Yeah.
and I
I will
think
say though, like coming out of you're the best lover that I ever had. In knowing like all of like the songs and reading all the different things that he's said about Allison like leading up to this point,
yeah.
this song feels like Cope too.
Oh, dude, it totally does. I mean, and
It's
it's
total Cope.
in contrast with the next one too, because he's kind of like, you know, it's almost like the, haha, I'm out on the town. I'm fucking going wherever I want to, doing whatever I want to. I don't need to be tied down, kind of shit. And then the next one is like when you're back at home by yourself, like, fuck, you
Yeah.
know, like,
The vibe is shifting all over the place. Like from Tennessee Kid to Ain't Nobody's Daddy Now, it's so upbeat and like playful. And then to just go right back down to the dumps. I do like the fiddle and the drums on Ain't Nobody's Daddy Now a lot. That was one thing that really stuck out to me. And like I can relate to like times where like a relationship did feel like captivity to a certain extent. And when you are out of it, you're like, fuck, god damn it. Okay, I don't have to like let like that's and I think that's like I hate the like patriarchal like idea that like we all grow up with like the old ball and chain like cliche and like shit like that because like in like the stigma of like when somebody you everybody's got a friend who's like a girlfriend guy. I'm a fucking girlfriend guy. Who like when they've got a girlfriend, they're just like hanging out with them, doing all, and like the difference is between like feeling like that's kept like captivity or whatever, is like, where do you want to be?
What are you choosing?
If that's where you want to be, then fucking go home. be home. Like, don't feel like again, it is like, you know, nice and important to remember to like get out and socialize and yada yada. But if you just want to be at home, fucking watching TV, chilling with your girl, chilling with your guy, there's nothing fucking wrong with that.
Nothing
And you
wrong with
should not
that.
feel like you're being weighed down by it. But if you are feeling weighed down by it, then you gotta figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and it's just fascinating too, because I'm imagining, Jesus, imagining that 10 years is his like longest relationship by far.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They had a
So
good run.
they had a good run. So it's like you're gonna have that. And Steve has always been that rambler. And so it's almost like this is his first taste back to the rambling after a long time.
Yeah.
But also now, you know, he shows up very differently for like the ain't nobody's daddy now line is also a part of it too, because I think there's this realization as well that because of John Henry's needs, he can't just be all over the place, you know? And that's what I mean, like Alison Moore like complains about having to stay in New York. But Steve was like, well, this is where his school is and all the people that know how to take care of him. And so, and we can't get this anywhere, just in any place. So I'm staying in New York. And so if you want to see your son, you're gonna have to be here. And it's very different from the way that Justin was raised, both I think because of Steve's age and maturity that he didn't have at the time, but also just because like John Henry has needs that Justin didn't have too, at the time, right? So it's not just
Justin
a
can be a latchkey kid.
yeah.
Justin can be a latchkey kid, probably for the detriment of.
Well, that's what I say, yeah, because it doesn't just it's still clearly all those years that Steve wasn't there for him had an effect. And you know, I think Steve is both so grateful that they reconciled and were able to have those times together, you know, in the years they were playing music together as Justin was playing himself. But you know, you can't help but think about what could have been and the reflections on, you know, I mean, yeah, it was before he was sober and like then, so anyway, but it's just, I think it's a different thing because to your point about it being like cope a little bit, like he knows the truth is you're about to be lonely as shit and you've got a hell of a job in raising this kid, but yeah, go out tonight and be a badass, like with your so with your sober ass. What are you doing? What are you even doing out there, man? Like, yeah, you're gonna end up back home by 9 p.m. like me. What are you doing? Like, so, you know, that kind of thing.
You're going to a coffee shop, my friend.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know what exactly you think you're about to get into in the village tonight. But go off, King, you know? So fuck yeah. But yeah, you see the other side of it in the next track, Better Off
Yeah,
Alone.
much, much different breakup song.
Yeah. And so like not this is not about the freedom, this is about the bitterness, right?
So, are you in on Ain't Nobody's Daddy Now and Better Off Alone, or are these,
I'm in on Ain't Nobody's Daddy Now because it's short and sweet and kind of a rollicks. I think Better Off Alone is just kind of boring.
Really? Dude, I think the vocal performance is like Oscar worthy.
Well, they don't give Oscars for vocal performance, so
And then I'm going to end the call right
yeah.
now.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's so
So tell me
funny.
more.
I don't know. I just the like the emphasis on certain words and like the emotion and like how much, I don't know, like just he it really like the fact that it's 4.5 minutes long is long, but it feels like it needs that time for him to like get out that agony that he's feeling for this.
I can appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I'll still be
It
a smart
is,
ass
I mean,
about
it's very like it's a kind of a pity party, but it's I feel it.
Yeah, no, respect.
I'm kind of a dramatic bitch, so I feel like I can relate
Dude.
to that shit.
Yeah. No, I want to dwell in my pity alone. So I don't want anybody to share that with me. So Steve, you keep that shit over there. I'm totally just kidding. I just thought this, no, every point you're making is legitimate. I was just bored. And that's enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I do like it, but I mean, it's not going on the fucking playlist. I just don't skip it.
That's what, okay. Yeah, that's what's up. That's what's up. The usual time.
Yes, we are on to side two now.
Side two. So this is the kind of like electric blues with harmonica that I tend to dig the most. Like when I'm thinking about when I like to listen to the blues, when I listen to fucking John Lee Hooker or Albert King, like these are, this is the kind of shit I like. It, like the
It's a
guitar,
great vibe.
yeah, the guitar's a little dirty. The
Yes.
harmonica is blowing out the microphone a little bit. You know what I mean? So it's got a nice like distortion to it. And I like the lyrics too.
I like the lyrics too. The very, very horny lyrics, but
Yeah.
it's good. It's
It's
good.
almost the older Steve gets, like the more horny songs he's writing. You notice that?
Yeah, I wrote Booty Call Blues for this.
Booty call blues. I was like, "Hey, Steve, man, what you been up to?" "Oh, man, just rambling." I'm like, "What is
Just
rambling?
rambling.
What does rambling mean? It means being a fucking creep. That's awesome."
I thought this is like a sequel to Graveyard Shift.
Huh. I didn't think about it that way. But yeah.
Because Graveyard Shift is also just a song about just well, I work the graveyard shift, so while everybody else's husbands are at work, I'm coming by your house.
That's what's up, man.
And this is just
He
a different time of the day that he's visiting.
it's basically he's got the same mindset as AC/DC. He's just very smart, so he's a little more subtle about how he writes about it, but it's the same vibe. It's horny old man stuff. And you know what? Hey man, as long as everything's consensual, you do you, Steve.
Dude, the lyric though, I've been down to Texas, I'm into New Orleans, I was born to ramble, you were born to haunt my dreams is
Yeah.
so good. It's so good.
And the anytime the wound is right, like, so there's something about like him acknowledging like I do this when I'm hurt.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's good. I thought I wrote this song is team having fun.
Yeah, respect. Can we talk
Yes.
about Go-Go Boots Are Back?
Yes, this riff is unreal.
Dude, it's, you know what it is? It's like a Rolling Stones riff.
Yeah.
Which it, again is like
That's blues.
this blues with like a little bit of flair on top of it, you know? So
Yeah, it's fucking surly, dude.
it sounds real like Keith Richards, and I mean that
Yes, it's
as a
yeah.
compliment.
Yeah, it's surly as fuck. It's very good.
Yeah.
Do you fuck with this song?
It's a, I do because I fucking like the riff. It's a little boomerish, man.
Oh yeah.
It's a, it's like a boomer ass song. It's, I'm not skipping it, but it, I don't love it either.
I mean, my thought on this was I wonder if Steve is aware of Scowl.
Do you think he could be?
He could be.
Scowl's that at that level that Steve could be aware.
And the cat from Scowl is the only person I've ever seen wear go-go boots, I think, in real life.
Well, yeah, where is it that he is seeing like all these go-go boots and mirrored shades? I don't
I don't
know.
know.
It might
I
be
don't know,
in
maybe
his.
24 2014 might have been a different time.
I was here, man. I don't remember that, but also I'm not the arbiter of. It's so funny because like we'll go out and Rachna will be like, "Yeah, I notice now people are wearing this," and I'm like, "What?" We just like notice different things. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? Like.
Ashton notices this shit because she's on like the TikTok and like
Right.
has like people who she knows who are like paying attention to like what's going on, and also she seems to be paying pretty good attention.
Well,
Meanwhile, I need a leash backpack.
Dude, it is just like it's such a funny thing because like if you put me and Rachna together, we'd be like a very good detective. You know what I mean? But like we each because like I'm not gonna remember what color shirt that person I was just talking to was wearing. But I can tell that guy 100 yards away is a cop. You know what I mean? Like by the way he's moving, or like something like that. Like I'll notice some like insane shit like that. Or I'll, you know, or I'll just be like, oh yeah, that guy's on something. Like from a, you know, like a mile away just from observing him. But then I wouldn't be able to tell you the fucking color of the shirt of a person who I was like talking to face to face. But she'll notice like, oh yeah, the kids are wearing like this now. And I'd be like, oh, all I've noticed is that the pants have gotten big again.
The pants are huge, dude.
Yeah. I saw my first pair, not just of baggy pants, but of legit like JNCO style pants in a while the other day on a kid. And I was just like, again, like the bottom just gets so nasty, man. Like how.
Did you get to our show early enough to see Chris, our drummer, wearing Austin, our fill-ins, JNCOs?
No.
There's pictures of it.
And Austin has JNCOs. That's amazing.
Austin has JNCOs. Sponsored by JNCOs.
Oh my God. Wow.
Orthodox is sponsored by JNCOs.
That's incredible. I'll just leave it at that.
But Chris put on the JNCOs. Chris is also like a whole like 7 inches shorter than Austin too, so those pants were
Oh
huge
yeah. I
on
just
Chris.
I never wore JNCOs because by the time those were really popular, again, I was fucking too punk. But I, especially in a place like New York, man, I'm like the bottoms just get so fucking filthy because they're dragging on the ground all the time and you're like stepping on them. So that's my thing. I just think they're a little bit impractical. I don't want my pants touching below my shoes. But yeah, the pants are big again. And I'm not like mad at it, but I'm not gonna write a song about it either, you know? That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I can see that. I just found a photo that I'm gonna email you right now.
Please do.
Because I want your reaction to it, like while we're talking. And I hope Ashton realizes that this email got sent from the LDB email.
I love that this, like, you're laughing so hard you can barely talk at
This
whatever you're
is
looking
one
at right
of
now.
my favorite memes I've seen in my whole goddamn life.
Well, I'm anxiously refreshing my shit to wait for it to show up. Dude, you are fucking tickled as fuck right now. This rules. It's not here yet, man. Did you send it?
It.
Oh, here it is. Okay. Oh my God. Dude, that's top notch.
Would you explain to the audience what I just
Yes,
emailed
on today's episode of 41-year-old white man explaining a meme, what we're looking at here is a depiction of Jesus Christ in a pair of JNCOs. And the caption is, he has risen with Riz spelled RIZZ. Risen. He has risen.
Holy shit, dude, I'm crying.
Like,
I just got rid of the migraine from band practice and it's back with a vengeance.
all because of this picture of Jesus in JNCOs. What
Holy
sets you off
shit.
more, the picture or the risen?
The risen, it's the
Yeah,
risen
it's the
thing.
risen, dude.
He's
It's fucking sick. I also love how it's
I
like
just spit laughed.
he also has like he has his he has his like hands crossed together, like that fucking meme of the kid with the watch. You know what I mean? Like,
It's fucking great, dude.
yeah.
It's awesome. All of his followers are just watching him too. That's
They're just like
cool.
waiting to see what he does. That's so
He's
sick.
just gonna riz, dude. That's awesome. But yeah.
Well,
Go-go boots are back. He has risen.
he has risen. JNCOs are back. It's all back.
JNCOs are back. It's all back.
Everything is secular.
Yep.
God damn it. circular, cyclical is what I was
Cyclical,
trying to
yep.
say. I was imagining.
Yeah, you could have said anything. I wasn't really paying attention because the oxygen is returning to my brain.
That's cool, man.
Yep.
Acquainted with the Wind. I'm curious.
I thought this would have been your favorite song.
Okay, dude, you're so good at this because this was
Song's
my number
awesome,
two.
dude.
This was my number two.
Yes.
Because I just think, like, what I wrote, Steve's written a fucking thousand different metaphors for being a rambler and still coming up with new and original and creative ones. I'm acquainted with the wind. Like, fuck yeah, that's such a good way
Yep.
to say that. And then on top of that, like the
The
mandolin, the
tempo,
fiddle
dude.
work, the temple, the t temple, Jesus, tempo.
Temple, yeah.
But it's like a straightforward blues riff, but with the mandolin and fiddle, which are not typical blues instruments,
Yeah.
doing like some kick-ass work there. So I do really dig this song.
And this is what Steve Earle blues record provides us with.
That's right. That's
It
right.
provides us with some silly songs like Baby Baby Baby, Princey's Baby, Go-Go Boots Are Back, Ain't Nobody's Daddy Now. But then we get Acquainted with the Fucking Wind, dude. It fucking
Wind.
rocks.
Yeah, there's some, I mean, again, there's killer tracks. This
The
and Tennessee,
dynamic
yeah.
in his vocals too, when he goes from quiet to louder, when he like starts howling too, like every way that he plays with volume in this song and all the different like analogies and the lyrics and whatnot, like you said, dude, just it's Acquainted with the Wind is such a good way to and the chorus is just so fucking catchy, dude.
Yeah, I
It's
totally agree.
awesome. It's a very catchy song. If I really hope like anybody who hadn't listened to this record is listening to it for the first time because they, for some reason, are doing this with us. Just we, you heard this too, and it, yes, you're right. It's good.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Tyler is still thinking about He Has Risen,
You
clearly.
said temple, I thought you were just like you're just because you're there. You're
No,
spiritually there.
that could be it. I think it's the stroke I'm
You're
having.
bearing witness.
I'm bearing witness to our Lord. And like, because he comes to us as we are, and so he's got to have riz if he wants to
He's
reach
and he's
this
got to
current
have
generation.
JNCOs.
Yeah. They're not going to take him seriously if he doesn't show up in huge pants. It's so funny. I love it.
Yes.
We talk about like nu metal, like I'm not mad at kids are into nu metal. What I'm mad at as an old fuck is nu metal historical revisionism, that
Yeah.
there are kids who weren't here for it that act like it was connected to hardcore. And I was like, no, we literally had fist fights. If there were mixed shows, we would do our best to kick as many push pit nu metal kids in the face as we possibly could.
Well, it's very similar to the, I mean, there's metalcore revisionism too,
That's true. Yeah.
where some metalcore gets lumped in with like metalcore that I would have considered like legitimate like participants in like underground scene,
Right.
and metalcore that just wanted to fuck your girlfriend.
Dude, 100%. Yeah. So that's the thing, because I'm very much, I'm like, dude, you like what you like. Slipknot has some sick riffs. I'm not disputing that at all. No, them and their fans were not a part of what we're a part of. That's not good, bad, or whatever, but
The
stop
band
pretending
had
like
good
these.
taste in certain things. Like the band certainly was a fan of like other Roadrunner bands and whatnot, and that.
Right. But they weren't playing with fucking hardcore and metalcore bands. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? Even in the early days, it was not the
And
same.
that's so much the difference between like, I mean, I know I'm biased, but like bands like Knocked Loose now, like that
Hundred
exist
percent.
in this big room, metalcore, hardcore, heavy music world, but will do underplays to play with hardcore bands
That's exactly
and
right.
wear integrity shirts on stage
Where
and
and do all that, and just as a person who like loves heavy music, but not necessarily that kind of heavy music, I'm drawn to it though, because I can tell what Isaac's influences are, whether he's writing inclination riffs or knock loose riffs, even though those are very different. You know what I mean? Like it's so there's something about it where I can like, you could put a bunch of other heavy ass bands in front of me right now, and I'd be like, yeah, I don't want this. And even though Knock Loose is not what I'm reaching for, and they certainly don't need my fucking 41-year-old ass to reach for it anyway. But when I do hear it, I'm like, that's pretty sick the way he
Yeah,
did
these
that.
people like hardcore.
Yeah, these
I can
people like
tell.
hardcore. I can tell these people like hardcore. Exactly. Exactly. So respect, wear whatever pants you want to. Just don't make me talk about Coal Chamber with you. Do you know that is the one, the first out of town show that Perfect World ever played? I think it was Philly. We drove down, and on the way back, because we were just driving down and then driving back home right afterwards, Chad goes, I'm driving, and he's in the passenger seat because everyone else had been drinking, of course. So straight edge boys up front. Chad goes, do you mind if I put on my 90s mix? And I was like, yeah, dude, that's sick. Put it on. And you know, here's me when I'm thinking about 90s, I'm like, we're gonna listen to the Smashing Pumpkins and Cranberries and stuff. First track, Loco by Coal Chamber. I
That
laughed so
fucking
hard.
rips.
I laughed so hard. I almost fucking like
90s.
put the car. It was like, I was like, that's true. This did come out in the 90s. Sick. And then we pulled up the music video. Have you seen the music video for Loco by
I
Coal
don't think
Chamber?
I ever have. Coal Chamber is the thing that kind of like wasn't on my radar very much when I was
Yeah,
of the age where it was relevant.
it was the kids who wore like, you know, fishnet just on their hands and shit like that, right? Like that kind of stuff. The video is legit hilarious. Without ruining too much of it for you, the theme is that there's a scary ice cream truck driver. And he goes into the house and causes chaos in Coal Chamber's house.
That's awesome.
It's
Ashton was working outside today, and she texted me that our ice cream truck driving through the neighborhood has spooky music now. So
Oh, dude, it could be the Coal Chamber ice cream
it
truck
could be
driver.
the ice cream truck. I
That's so
told
sick.
her to lock the doors next time.
Yeah, for real. Dude, that's awesome. Let's talk about a few more songs and get out of here.
Yeah,
Losing it.
yeah.
Baby's Just as Mean as Me. So this is the song that's a duet with Eleanor Whitmore from the Mastersons. And I dig it.
Her delivery is awesome on this
Yeah,
song.
her delivery's awesome. Their voices go well together. And again, it's like it is blues, but this one has more of like a New Orleans shuffle to me. And I fucking love her voice. And the Mastersons being a group that I know of but had not paid much attention to, it makes me want to go listen to them because I dig her both vocal work and violin work on this record so
Did
much.
you not ever get to see him play with them?
I did not, no.
I saw that they on that on the Copperhead Road tour, they opened it and then she was the fiddle player and God, what's her husband's name on
He's the
here?
one who's actually named Masterson, I
He's the
think.
one who's actually named Masterson. Yeah, where the fuck is the oh, it's they're on the
Dude, maybe
reverse
I
side of
did.
this.
Honestly, I can't even remember.
Chris Masterson. Yeah, Chris
Yeah.
Masterson. He would play guitar in with them too. So they played for fucking like 2.5 hours
Nuts.
essentially every night. I
Yeah.
mean, no, probably like 30 minutes, 35 minutes on their own, and then an hour or 15, hour and a half with Steve. So a
Yeah.
long time.
Yeah.
But and also, I mean, people they all get a break while Steve plays a couple songs by himself.
True.
Yeah, no, they were awesome. Then whenever me and Ashton went and saw them in Cincy, they were on that tour as well during co like in the midst of COVID, where their steel player was like playing with a mask on, and it was so sad to think about those times when like we were not comfortable. But yeah, no, I really like the fiddle and the guitar like conversation in this song too.
I do too. And there's, it's got a, yeah, like, yeah, that's exactly what I wrote. It's fucking cool. It's a good song.
Yeah, I know you. I know you.
You do know me. You know the
I
kind of
think
shit that
about
I'm
you and
into.
the things that you think sometimes.
Yeah. Like I am a fucking sucker for when instruments have a conversation
Yeah,
in
at
a
a certain
song.
point, I think I can do this podcast by myself, but you can't do it without me because you need somebody to send you pictures of Jesus Christ wearing JNCOs.
That's correct.
AI can't do that.
AI can't do that. God,
Although it probably made that
I
meme.
shudder to think of what AI would come up with based on that prompt. And then speaking of AI and music, though, I mean, you know, like who of your favorite artists doesn't have a random AI song that got fucking uploaded? Did you get one too?
Yes, we got one.
Oh,
I had people
superstar.
text me and say, love the new song.
Dude, and it's a fucking, no pun intended, epidemic this past week. Everywhere.
I know it happened in Neverending Game.
Happened to Most Precious Blood, happened to Earth Crisis, happened to Terror.
Terror,
Like,
yeah, Terror had two songs.
yeah.
Me and Ashton were listening to it, and we were like, I really like the old Terror, actually.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I
I
guess
don't like this
they've
direction.
earned the right to go in this new like fantasy metal direction, I guess. But like, and the artwork was all like this, but I'm just like, I think about all the fucking tech bros who are still like, dude, AI is gonna like change the world, blah blah blah. And I'm like, it's basically given us fake songs on artist profiles, terrible writing, and people trying to like cheat and not write. I my boss wrote this like memo, and she was like, I use ChatGPT, and I just went, yeah, I can tell. And without realizing, like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And she was mad, but I think she was embarrassed enough that she didn't say anything, but also I'm gonna get
Yeah.
fired. And then also, like, you know, the internet is like even worse than it used to be.
Yes.
Like even Googling some basic shit gets you just like useless nonsense. You have to, unless you know exactly what you're looking for. So that's AI. Hell yeah.
All of these things need to be reined in and regulated and made to be
Yeah.
public utilities. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but chances of that happening. I mean, I'll say one of the
If we did three strikes rule for people in California with felonies, we should do three strikes rule with like bad financial decisions in companies. And
yeah.
after you completely fuck up and bungle things three times, the government just takes your company and
They
just they run
should.
it now.
And which, by the way, one of the only legitimately good people, in my opinion, in the Biden administration is Lina Khan, the head of the FTC. So, of course, I'm not surprised at all to read an article that comes out today that says Kamala Harris's donors privately urge firing of FTC's Khan. You know, because she actually wants to protect consumers and keep fuckers, you know, like these Silicon Valley bros from
The
doing whatever
most
they want.
reassuring thing I've heard recently is how much Kamala is trying to appeal to the business crowd.
Thank
It's
God.
great. They've had hard times.
What a relief.
They've
Yeah.
had hard times.
Oh, yeah. But look forward to more AI music. And just, I mean, it's just another, it's a perfect place for grifters. Even in fucking, dude, every fucking post I see at this dumb education shit that I have to look at for my job is people
Oh my
like,
God, I thought you were going to say on
look,
Twitter is pussy in bio. I was going to say, yes, yes it is.
yeah, because that's, I mean, that's what I'm looking for. Is like, come to this conference about how AI can transform your school or whatever. And I'm like, just even the fact that so many of these are happening and they're funded and stuff like that is already like making me fucking
It's Tony Robbins
cringe.
shit, dude.
Yeah. Hell, it's worse. Because at least Tony Robbins, like, I don't know. At the root of it, there's something about like, hey, believe in yourself, my dude.
Didn't he sexually assault some people though?
Who's to say that AI hasn't sexually assaulted all of us? I actually don't know anything about Tony Robbins other than he has the big,
The
like,
big face.
big face.
Yep. Well, I mean, AI is absolutely sexually assaulting people if you want to call commenting under every post saying pussy in bio.
Yeah.
It definitely is. One last thought on Baby's Just as Mean as Me that I had before we move on is I wrote, this is a wonderfully pleasant song about being an asshole.
It is. Yeah, it's about being an asshole, being in a toxic relationship where both of you are toxic. But with two people with wonderful voices.
You know what I hate, and I will say this.
Yes.
I hate when people break up and they try to make it everyone else's business.
Oh, yes. Oh,
Can
yes.
certain things just be none of our business?
I would love
Can we
that.
not have to know everything about every ugly little thing that anybody does?
Bro, I've had some friends lately that have just been dropping bombs on me about like other people where I'm like, I want to be here for you. I'm always going to love you, but like, I don't need to know all this.
Like some
Like,
things, there are red lines.
yeah.
There are some things that I want to know so I can stop fucking with that person.
Yeah.
There are also other things that I do not care about and do not even approach the
Exactly.
threshold.
Yeah, these were not things where it's like this person like is morally compromised, you know, or like you should not. It was just stuff like you want me to hate them with you, and I just rather not think about them is
Yeah.
really where I'm at. Like I will not spend the energy to hate or avoid them.
I used to say this all the time enough that I included it in a Constraint song. Life is messy, don't be tacky.
That's true, man. Don't be tacky.
Don't be tacky.
Be like Jesus the Rizzler Christ.
Seriously.
Gambling Blues. I can make this quick, man. This is a skipper. I don't need this shit at all.
Really? I love a
Yeah.
2-minute blues track.
I mean, that's it's like I appreciate that it's a appropriate short track, but I don't need it.
I don't hate this song. Have we ever talked about gambling on this podcast, though?
I don't think so. You a gambler, Tyler?
I'm a prolific loser, dude.
What's your poison? What do you like to play?
I like to play blackjack until I lose all my money, or I like to play blackjack until I've won some money and then lose it all on roulette.
Ah, very nice. I was into it for a while. And yeah, blackjack was also, I never played roulette. I played blackjack.
I have never played roulette either. I've lost all my money on roulette.
Yeah. Were you betting numbers or were you betting like, you know, odds, evens, red, black?
I usually put it all on red or black.
Yeah. So you got a 50-50, 2-1, but you lose.
Every time.
You know what I was doing for a little while is a little bit of that sports gambling. And I had some big wins that fueled a lot of small losses that added up to be as much as the big win. You know what I mean? Like I would randomly be, because the things, you know, you can bet just like who's going to win the game or whatever, and that's fine, but you're not going to win much money off of that, right? But I would put in random, it's like if I put $10 on this dude's going to hit a home or this dude's going to score a touchdown or have like over, you know, 100 total yards or is going to hit a home, you know, specific thing, you can put a little bit of money on that. And if that hits, like, so I had one where I put like $25 on some player like getting a home run and a double in the same game because it had like an odds boost or whatever. And it made like $900 off of it. And so then I thought I was the fucking man. And instead of,
You thought you were Moneyball.
yeah, and instead of, you know, cashing out that $900 and like enjoying it or responsibly saving it or anything else, you know, I made endless other like $20 bets that I would lose over time to the point that I realized like I'm just about even. And so I deleted the app off my phone. That was my
That's
score.
good. I respect your restraint, and that's why when I go gambling, I leave my wallet in the car.
Dude, 100, you have to just take the amount of
What
money
you're
that you're
willing to
comfortable
lose.
losing. That's it. That's it. And that's what when Rutschman and I went to Vegas together one time, which is a fun town outside of the gambling. You know what I mean? But I think we both had a
Smells
healthy
like
range
piss,
this.
but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even outside of like the strip, you know what I mean? Like we went, there were a couple of neighborhoods we really liked. But you know, it was just like a nice like get before we had a kid, doing one of those like let's fucking go somewhere and found cheap tickets and went. But I thought we both had a healthy orientation to it too, because we like set here's how much we're willing to. And dude, that's what was funny too. I was done in like 40 minutes. Like I had lost all that I was gonna lose. And I was playing blackjack, which, you know, one of the pros is supposed to be like, you can go, you can play for a while, you know, you'll win some hands, you'll lose some hands. I was done in 40 minutes. She was playing slots and fucking played all night and came out like $100 ahead. So,
Hey,
you know.
I've never done that. Anytime I play slots, I lose it all.
Yeah. I mean, because exactly.
I lose it all, and I have no idea what's happening.
And then her sister, who was living in her sister was living in California at the time, came out and met us to hang out for a couple of days. Literally, we were walking through a casino just to go eat. She passes by a slot machine, sticks $5 in it, and won $500.
Fuck.
Just casually, and just it was she is the most like, oh, look at that. Like, I love her, but she's the kind of person that could like show up with like no plan, nowhere, like I don't know where I'm gonna stay, I don't know where I'm gonna eat, I don't have any money, and end up having the best time in the world, where I would be like, you know, pissing myself on the street alone, like trying to whatever. She's got a charmed life is what I'm saying. And I envy it.
We just watched that Netflix special or that Netflix series on Anna Delvey, and
Ah, dude.
yeah.
Me and Rachna do the voice to each other all the time. I go like, that makes you look paw.
You're less fat now.
Yeah.
Very good.
Two A to one pop.
She's so cool.
Yeah,
2A1
so
Pac.
this has been the gambling section of the podcast. Let's close it out, man, because I'm losing my mind, but this has been a blast. King of the Blues. You know what, man? You know what I realized? This has the exact same chord progression as Voodoo Child Slight Return by Jimi Hendrix. And I
Oh,
think
really?
that's intentional. I
Yeah,
think
I
that's
can
a
see
nice
that.
little nod. And because I was like, why does this feel so familiar? And then I like got, was like, even the like, dun, dun,
How
dun,
long did that take you to figure
dun,
out?
probably like the third listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a
Because
good
that's a,
catch.
yeah. And that's a long song. This one isn't. But
Yeah, this one's not that long.
because in that
I
song,
really like the lyrics in this song, and
I
I
like the
think
lyrics too.
the story's good. I like the music, but I love the lyrics. And one thing I one thought I had during this song in particular, I think the last listen, was the whole record is so loose, but like dialed at the same time.
That's a good way to explain it. Loose but dialed in.
Like it
Yeah.
feels like it's got a lot of space, but it's
I
like
mean,
very intentional.
there's so many style, like, you know, that doesn't work for me in like hardcore. I want hardcore to be tight. But I'm thinking about there's so many bands. Dude, that's Lucero. That's hot water music, even for
It's
me.
rancid.
Like it's rant. Yeah, it's like on the edge of falling apart the entire time, but they've actually got it fully under control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and I fucking love it. Alkaline Trio's like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much.
So I think that's an apt comparison. I think it's a great closer. I
I think
really
so too.
found myself wishing that it just went from Baby's Just As Mean As Me to King of the Blues and then closed.
Trying to think how many songs we got on this record. One, two, three.
That 11?
Yeah, it could have been 10 songs.
Could have been 10 songs. I would have been
Could have been
fine with
10
that.
songs. I dude, the line about before I drew my second breath, my mama knew she'd just given birth to the king of the blues, and on that day, somewhere, somebody else died, alone in the dark, and nobody cried, because there can only be one, and I can't be denied. It's so hard,
It's
dude.
hard.
It's so hard. The God, what was the one line I love the most in this song? One foot in the grave and one hand on the handle of time. That's so good.
It's sick. Dude, between those and The Balance Comes Due Someday,
Yeah.
hard.
Dude,
Blue.
it's hard. So on this record, so Baby Baby Baby, you keeping it or losing it?
I'm losing it. I'm losing Baby Baby Baby, and I'm losing Gambling.
So we're keeping You're the Best Lover,
Yeah.
Tennessee Kid, Nobody's Daddy, Better Off Alone, The Usual Time, Go Go Boots, Acquainted with the Wound, or and Acquainted with the Wind, Baby's Just as Mean, and King of the Blues. So a 9-song LP would have been serviceable.
Yeah, nine songs would have been great.
That's what the Inclination
And
LP is,
still,
and it's fucking
yeah,
awesome.
and still plenty long for even a Steve Earle LP, you know?
Yeah, it's good. Ray Kennedy, he recorded this one. Produced by R.S. Field. I looked up, he's a producer out of Hattiesburg, so he
Oh,
at
hell
least
yeah.
went to a Mississippi man
Mississippi, shout out.
to do his thing. But Tony Fitzpatrick does the art on it. I don't like it as much as the other ones, I'll say that. I do have a Terraplane shirt. That's just the car on the front and then the dates on the back. It's cool. Scott gave it to
That's
me.
cool.
Shout out, Scott.
Oh, R.S. Field also did Justin's Midnight at the Movies.
Ooh, I like that one a lot. Nice. I wonder what year did Midnight in the Movies come out?
Before this, 2013.
Ooh, I wonder if Justin introduced them.
Might have. He's also worked with John Mayall, Billy Joe Shaver. Nice little career for old
I like
R.S.
that. I
Field.
have a Billy Joe Shaver tattoo that I wasn't aware was a song that he wrote. I've got a black rose tattooed on me. I thought it
Oh,
was a
hell
Waylon
yeah.
Jennings song. I was wrong.
Yeah, man. He also has a very serious looking picture of himself on his Twitter account, Mr. R.S. Field.
Mr. R.S. Field.
And you know who he loves? The Hives.
That's pretty interesting.
He's like, he's got, he posts, you know, like three times a year. And half of the posts are about the Hives. I
That
don't
is a very intense photo for him at his X, the everything app
know. Yeah.
profile photo.
Field Crow is his handle if you're interested in hanging out with Mr. R.S. Field, who loves the Hives. Swedish garage rockers, the Hives. Man, this has been a blast. Thank you for, as always, being on this journey with us. We're going to talk some more blues soon, but again,
I don't know if it'll be soon, but it might be when I get home from Japan.
I was about to say soon, meaning when we get to it. Y'all have noticed, those of you that are faithful listeners who we deeply appreciate, like, we have not been able to consistently upload bi-weekly lately. That's going to continue for a little bit longer.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. You'll be fine though. I promise you'll be fine. But we'll be excited to talk to you again as soon as we can. Take care of one another. Tyler, you got anything else to say?
He has risen.
He has risen. God bless. Have a good night.